This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Completely surreal day in New York City in front of the courthouse of Donald Trump's trial, closing arguments. I'll tell you all the latest about that. Plus, insane story out of UCLA medical school. You should care about this if you, have a doctor. Give it the latest with the economy. Can anything that Biden do turn this around before it's time to vote? Also, the latest with Klaus Schwab stepping down from the World Economic Forum, but he's not really going anywhere. That's all coming up next right here on I'm Right with Jesse Kelly.
Democrats, you are gangsters. You are gangsters. You are gangsters. You.
You're a little punk. You're a softie. You're a nobody. Your movie sucks. You're trash.
That was the Trump trial today. That was outside the New York City courtroom today. I'm Mike Slater filling in for Jesse Kelly. Oh, is that the clip? This clip right here. Look at him. There's Robert De Niro rolling up in his COVID mask as well. We just stop all analysis from him right at that moment right there. I'm Mike Slater filling in for Jesse Kelly today. I host Breitbart News Daily on SiriusXM Patriot. We simulcast the show right here on the first TV every morning. So we'll see you bright and early tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock where we will talk in more detail about all this as well. But surreal day at the Trump trial in New York City. Very bizarre. Joe Biden's team has distanced themselves from this Trump trial, which I think is a wise move for them, until today when they sent out Robert De Niro and two Capitol Hill police officers. Here's another clip of the press conference they gave.
First of all, let me say this first and foremost. We're not here today because of what's going on over there. We're here today because you all are here. And so we are glad that you're all here this morning. We're here primarily because of the threat that Donald Trump poses to the United States of America and to our democracy.
Do you consider Trump a threat to all these wars Biden has gotten us into?
Any media questions?
Is this a weaponization of the Justice Department, sir?
Any media questions?
You won't answer the real questions, only the fake news.
But this city is pretty accommodating. We make room for clowns. We have them all over the city. People who do crazy things in the street, we tolerate it. It's part of the culture, but not a person like Trump who will eventually run the country. That does not work, and we all know that. Anyway, we make room for clowns, to each his own. But no one takes him or took him really seriously. They take him seriously now, of course. And that's why I've joined the Biden-Harris campaign, because the only way to preserve our freedoms and hold on to our humanity is to vote for Joe Biden for president. Really. We don't have a choice.
Robert De Niro is a lunatic. He's like Keith Olbermann totally obsessed TDS guy. So here's how you need, all you need to know about how this happened. Polls are awful for Joe Biden right now. The Politico had an article, Dems in full-blown freakout over Biden. So this is the sign of a campaign that is in, as Trump would say, total freefall. The great Josh Hammer is here, host of America on Trial with Josh Hammer, and he's going to be hosting Jesse Kelly's show tomorrow right here. Josh, good to talk to you, brother.
Mike, always good to see you, my friend.
So it was extra weird today because it was closing arguments today. So what happened?
Yeah, so first of all, let me just address the Robert De Niro thing. You know, Mike, I mean, this kind of pains me on a very personal level. I mean, I grew up, I feel like I grew up with Robert De Niro. I mean, like, he was everywhere. I mean, he was with Meet the Parents, with Ben Stiller and all that. But when I got old enough to watch older films and appreciate it, it felt like Robert De Niro was the star of every single one. I mean, Godfather Part II, Taxi Driver, Raging Bull, Goodfellas, Casino. A legendary actor. So to watch him choose to go out like this as a partisan left-wing hack, as a sycophant for the New York Times, CNN, MSDNBC agenda, it's really sad. I mean, to go out not with a bang, but just with a profound whimper. So on a personal level, as a longtime fan of Robert De Niro's, I mean, this has just been an awful, awful, awful start to the day so far. But what's actually happening in the courtroom, as you allude to, is frankly much more important than all of the sturm und drang, all of the drama outside of the courtroom. What's happening now is we are getting to jury instructions. At this point, I'm probably not going to come till tomorrow. But jury instructions are going to possibly make or break this trial, because the judge, who's going to have to be very, very specific with how he instructs the jurors with what to look for there, he's going to have some decisions to make here. And the big problem for the judge, which is the big problem for this case in general, is that the prosecution, Alvin Bragg, Matthew Colangelo, Susan Hoffinger, all the prosecutors there in the Manhattan DA's office, they have thus far, this is the single most important legal facet of this entire case, Mike, they have thus far failed to actually say what the black letter theory of the case is. Let me say that again. We are about to reach a verdict in the first ever criminal trial of a former president of the United States, and the prosecution has literally not even told the American people or the broader world, they've not told humanity what the actual legal theory is. We know that it is 34 counts of fraudulent bookkeeping in New York State, but we are also told it's in furtherance of something else. They haven't actually said what that something else is. As you and I have discussed elsewhere, we can surmise, we that it is in furtherance of a federal U.S. campaign finance law violation. First of all, dubious at best whether Alvin Bragg, the Manhattan DA, can even bring a federal prosecution of this nature, especially when the U.S. Attorney's Office, the federal prosecutors in the Southern District of New York, looked into this and then passed on that. Second of all, most important, is that even if you assume that that is the actual law here, you need an unambiguous, exclusive, and sole finding of specific intent on the part of Donald Trump and the Trump organization. In other words, they have to show beyond a reasonable doubt, because that's a threshold for all of this, that the $130,000 in alleged hush money payments made to Michael Cohen, which is not a crime at all in and of itself, that's totally legal, no matter what you might think of it morally, totally legal. They have to show that that was made for the sole, exclusive, and unambiguous purpose of actually helping Donald Trump's 2016 campaign. Will Juan Bershon actually put that into the jury instructions? I don't know. That's kind of where my guessing game ends up short, because I don't know what's in this guy's head. But that is what I'm looking for at this point.
Okay, jury instructions. What a fascinating thing that if you didn't go to law school or haven't been on a jury, don't really know what it is. But what you said there, you said sole. So that payment has to be made proven beyond a reasonable doubt, which I'd love if you could define that again for us. But beyond a reasonable doubt that it was done for the sole purpose of advancing this other crime or helping his campaign, right? But it could be done for also other purposes, and that would negate that?
Yeah, so I mean that since day one has been one of the easiest ways for the Trump legal defense, in my mind, to try to prove that he is not guilty of these crimes. And, you know, the Trump legal, the defense did not actually call a lot of witnesses. They only called two witnesses to the stand there. But we got into this a little bit in some of their testimony. If you can introduce anything remotely resembling mixed motives into these hush money payments to Michael Cohen in 2016, again, even conceding for the sake of argument that these payments even happened, that's a factual dispute, even conceding that they happened here, if you can introduce any mixed motives into why Donald Trump and the Trump organization felt the need to make these payments, the prosecution's case is over. It's donezo. So in other words, you can show that maybe Donald Trump wanted to make these payments to try to hide his son, Barron Trump, to try to prevent him from being bullied in middle school or something like that. If you can introduce any kind of evidence that would demonstrate that, oh, I don't know, a very reasonable thing, like maybe Donald Trump wanted to protect his marriage with Melania. He didn't want Melania to kind of hear all this salacious stuff from Kara McDougal and Stormy Daniels. If they can introduce that, then the prosecution's case fails. But it's also this beyond a reasonable doubt threshold, which is a very, very high criminal threshold. And this notion that in a criminal case that you have to really, really, really show beyond a reasonable doubt that the guy is guilty, that goes way, way back to the English common law. I'll whip out a good quote for you, Slater. So there's a great English common lawyer by the name of Sir William Blackstone. He was alive in the 18th century. He was probably the single most formidable codifier of the entire English common law, which America inherited at the time of our founding. And in his most famous work, his 1775 Commentaries on the Laws of England, Blackstone famously said that it is better to let 100 guilty men walk scot-free and to put one innocent person behind bars. That is kind of the best way to think about beyond a reasonable doubt. That notion right there is codified into our law. So again, with that, having said all that, I have to reasonably expect that if there is any juror on this jury who has any scruples in his or her bones, if they're approaching this with any degree of intellectual honesty, then there's gonna be a hung jury. It's New York City, so maybe that won't be the case, but we'll see.
So hung jury again to be just one person, this one holdout. So it could be a Trump supporter. It could be just a fair person. It could be, remember there's a correct me wrong, there's some lawyers on this jury as well. So they know that Blackstone quote as well. So just one of those guys to be like, guys, no, forget it. It didn't meet that threshold. That's a hung jury. And then I guess, what are the legal ramifications of that? And then what are the political ramifications of a hung jury? Especially knowing that most people, and even most people in the media, probably don't even know what that means.
Yeah, so hung jury means exactly what you just said, which is you literally just need one. You need one juror. So basically, for a criminal trial in America, at this point, all 50 states require a unanimous criminal jury for conviction. Now, that wasn't always the case. Back in the day, you could actually define beyond a reasonable doubt as being 75%. But in a Supreme Court case 3 or 4 years ago, the Supreme Court actually overturned the last two holdouts, which were the states of Louisiana and Oregon of all states. And they actually now have it constitutionally mandated that all 50 states, even in their state courts, have to have a unanimous jury for criminal conviction. So that actually is what has to happen here. And if you get one jury holdout, then you actually have a hung jury. So to your point as well, which is a point that I've been making on America on Trial for at least a month or two now, since we learned the jurors' identity or at least their vocational backgrounds, I've been saying over and over again that yes, I actually am cautiously optimistic about the fact that there are two jurors who are lawyers by training, like myself. Again, they're probably liberals. I mean, this is New York City, so they're probably liberals. But at a bare minimum, Mike, you have two people who went to law school who understands that the very first thing you need to do when you're looking at a legal case is to, at a bare minimum, ask, what is the law? Are we citing constitutional provisions here? Are we citing criminal statutes, civil statutes? Is it judge-made common laws, international treaty? Is it United Nations so-called international law, which AKA is actually fake law? But like, what is the actual source of law here? At a bare minimum, a juror who is a lawyer should be asking these questions. Again, the prosecution has not met even this bare bones rudimentary threshold, which is why I saw Tom Cotton earlier today say that a judge in Juan Merchan's position should not even let this thing get to a jury. He should just dismiss it or deliberately instruct jurors to order a conviction. That's what he should, an acquittal. That's what he should do. He's not going to do so, though. So I guess, we're just going to have to see.
Wow. So we got about a minute. When do you expect there to be a decision made by the jury? And then what do you think the political ramifications are going to be of this, especially knowing that most people don't, like most people will hear hung jury and they'll think that he was sentenced to hanging. So like most people have no idea what that will even mean. So what do you see the political ramifications?
Yeah, we're probably gonna find out this week. I would be surprised if it goes till next week, although it's possible. I mean, it's possible that the jury really just takes a lot of time to deliberate here. But they've been chewing on this for weeks now. They haven't heard a ton of new information, to be honest with you, over the past week or so, ever since Michael Cohen got off the witness stand. The Michael Cohen testimony really should have been the final nail in the coffin for the prosecution. They probably should have just wrapped it up and gone straight to a jury vote at that point, because, you know, objectively speaking, there's no coming back from that. The political ramifications of a hung jury or acquittal, I think, are fantastic for Donald Trump. He will skyrocket up the polls there. On the flip side, if they actually convict and they really do put him in Rikers Island, God forbid, for, you know, a day or two or maybe even longer than that, I don't think it's going to help Democrats, Mike. I could even see a situation like that where it might politically backfire in their face as well.
Yeah, I think Trump's in a win-win right here. Josh Hammer, America on Trial. That's the podcast. You can download, listen to it everywhere, and please do. Josh, great to talk to you, brother.
You bet. Anytime.
And Josh, again, filling in tomorrow for Jesse Kelly. So more great insight from him tomorrow. Coming up next, more on Biden family corruption, more on the latest with the World Economic Forum. The head, Klaus Schwab, has stepped down. What does that mean for the World Economic Forum? And then the latest with DEI wokeness / communism infiltrating our medical schools. It's all coming up next right here on I'm Right with Jesse Kelly, Mike Slater filling in, Slater Radio on Twitter and Instagram. More next, spread the word.
I love coffee. I love it so much. And you know what does my heart well? It happened to me this morning. I was filling up my little coffee bean thing and I was out. I thought, oh my gosh, am I out of blackout coffee? And I went and pulled open the freezer and there's a big bag of blackout coffee beans waiting for me. That was the best. Blackout coffee is not only incredible coffee, they deliver it to my front door, amazing prices, and most importantly to me is they share my values. Blackout Coffee doesn't do it quietly either. Go look at their freaking merchandise, talking about America and God and guns. How many corporations in this country actually talk about that stuff anymore? Blackout Coffee does. I love them. I always will. It's the only place I get coffee from now. Go to blackoutcoffee.com/Jesse. What that does is it gets you 20% off your first order. blackoutcoffee.com/Jesse. All right?
What we are very proud of now is the young generation, like Prime Minister Trudeau, President of Argentina, and so on, so that we penetrate the cabinets.
Penetrate the cabinet. This guy's like so central casting Bond villain. It's unbelievable. He's no longer. He's still with us, but he's no longer the head of the World Economic Forum. And let's not get too excited. He's still there at the World Economic Forum. He's just not the head of it anymore. Anyway, always good to get an update on Klaus Schwab with Seamus Bruner, the author of this book right here, Control Oligarchs. And I don't know if you can see once this fancy schmancy graphic goes away. As it slides through here, I don't know if you can see here all the marks I have in the book, all the corners folded. I don't know if you can see that. Seamus Bruner here. What's going on, Seamus? How are you?
Mike, great to be back with you. Thank you so much for showing the book there. Klaus Schwab on the cover. I guess I'll have to do another book with the new head of World Economic Forum.
Yeah, who's just as evil, but we'll get to him in a second. So one of your chapters, of course, so we got... We got the big guys. We got Soros. We got Zuckerberg, Gates, Bezos, and Klaus. What do we need to know about Klaus? And what's he doing now?
Yeah, so Klaus Schwab has always been sort of the figurehead, the front man, the spokesperson for the global elite. A lot of people, you don't even know who they are dictating the policies of your country, of our country here in America. But Klaus Schwab is the front man, and so he... comes out of the shadows and announces some crazy new thing, like, let's say, the Great Reset during the pandemic. But he's really just announcing policies that were cooked up in the shadows years beforehand. And so in some ways, with him stepping back, he's going to still be the chairman of the Board of Trustees. So he's not really going anywhere. But it's really no change. I mean, the World Economic Forum is still going to be drafting these policies, working with organizations like the World Health Organization on pandemic treaties. A lot of the stuff that comes out of the UN and things like the Paris Climate Accords, those are all drafted and conceived at Davos. And so it's not a big change, but what the World Economic Forum says they're going to be doing, that's really what should alarm us.
Yeah, actually, kind of good for him for building an organization that's bigger than him, that can live on beyond. Unfortunately, it's an organization for bad, for evil, but he built it from nothing and made it. So congratulations. What is next on the World Economic Forum agenda?
Yeah, and his family, by the way, will still be heavily involved. He's got two kids. He's got a nephew. They're all on the World Economic Forum payroll. They're each as crazy as their father. And so the Schwabs are still in the mix. Olivier and Nicole Schwab are the children, and they're on steering committees and all that. And it's a huge payday for the Schwab family. But what's next for the World Economic Forum? So they are going to continue being the leading global institution for public-private partnerships. And that sounds sort of benign, and what's going on with what's a public-private partnership anyway? And whenever you hear that word, you need red flags, sirens going off, because what a public-private partnership is when the corporations partner with the government. And so they get it's the worst of both worlds for us, the best of both worlds for them. For example, the government has all of the powers that a government has, the monopoly on the coercive use of force, but the corporations have all the benefits that the government lack, which is like total opaqueness in their movements, that corporations are able to hide behind things like intellectual property or proprietary work product so that we can't peer behind the curtain. For example, you can FOIA the emails of the government. You can't FOIA the emails of a corporation. And so let me give you just a couple examples of public-private partnerships in action. Big tech censorship. The government isn't allowed to infringe on your First Amendment rights. But the tech platforms, because they're a business, and the left always comes at you like, don't you support a business's right to choose who they do business with? Therefore, Facebook is allowed to censor you. All of the other big tech platforms are allowed to censor you. And the government can't censor you, but what they can do is shoot an email over to Facebook and say, hey, take these accounts offline. So that's an example of a public-private partnership. Another example is the pandemic response. The government isn't always able to completely lock you down and completely infringe on all of your basic human rights, but all of the businesses in partnership with the government said, well, unless you get the vaccine, you're not allowed to come to our restaurant. You're not allowed to work for our company. And all the left suddenly fell in love with corporations after hating them since forever and said, yeah, it's the business's right to force you to take the jab. And so that's another example. So these public-private partnerships, that's what the World Economic Forum is going to be focusing on. They said it, they admitted it, and that's what is really alarming for the future.
You made a statement there that's very fascinating and deserves further detail. In our lifetime, there was a balance between government and business to the point where, as you said, progressives hated business. But for the rest of us, that created a nice balance. We had the progressives over here in government and more conservative people in business. But something happened relatively recently, perhaps you know better than me, surely you do, where business now moved over to the left as well. And now we have no balance. Us regular people speak to that.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, it's the wokeification. I mean, here's another public-private partnership. They have businesses coming in and giving DEI trainings to students and to teachers. And so ordinarily, parents would have a right to check out what's going on, what's in the curriculum. But now, because it's a private business, you're not allowed to look at their proprietary training materials. Same thing with software. They're putting kids in front of laptops that are basically, you know, taking them on a journey of like, are you trans or are you just gay? And the parents want to see the software and what's under the hood. But the laptops are in the schools and the companies are saying, no, you can't look at the software because we're a private company and this is our work product. And so when did the corporations go woke? I mean, that's a great question. It's kind of been happening for 50, 60, 70 years. I mean, the World Economic Forum is the hub for where the largest corporations in the world, the Fortune 500 in the U.S., they are all with maybe a few handful of exceptions, they are all members of the World Economic Forum. And they find that they've gone left, they've gone woke because they get the awesome powers of the government. The left is the government party. And so this marriage between big business and big government has really blossomed into full-blown fascism, full-blown tyranny.
I mean, the moral of this story, unfortunately for today, is that Klaus Schwab no longer the head, the president of World Economic Forum, but he's still involved, and World Economic Forum's not going anywhere. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And what it is, he's just the figurehead. So, I mean, these big businesses and people like Bill Gates and George Soros, they're not going anywhere either. They're really driving the ship. I mean, he's not the total brains behind the operation. I mean, you know, a figurehead or a spokesperson, he kind of just comes out. They chose a terrible spokesperson because, like you said, central casting for Bond villain. But the new guy, Borga Brenda, who's running the day-to-day, is the former so-called conservative. Don't let the European version of the word conservative fool you. He is he's from Norway. He's a total lefty, big donor to the Clinton Foundation. He's on the board of various globalist organizations like the United Nations or the Bilderberger conferences. And so this guy is going to be no better than Klaus Schwab. But you do see the mainstream media saying he's a conservative. So they're at least trying to give a little lip service, but you can't fall for it.
Yeah, put Trump on the World Economic Forum. We'll see how they like that. Great, Seamus, we're grateful you're following all this for us. Everyone go buy the book, Control Oligarchs. You can read about all these guys trying to control your life. Appreciate you, Seamus.
Thanks, Mike.
Seamus mentioned DEI. Coming up next, we have an incredible, horrific DEI story coming for your doctors. Tell you about that next, right here on I'm Right with Jesse Kelly on the First TV. Spread the word.
Sleep might be the most underrated thing in the world because it changes everything. It changes your entire life, your entire day. Haven't you gone through so many nights where you didn't get a good night's sleep, toss and turn and back hurt? Or even worse, this is what always got me. If you end up taking something to sleep, everything you take to sleep makes you feel like crap the next day. It's awful. You wake up in this fog. You never fully wake up. It's terrible. And then I found Dream Powder. What a name, right? Beam is the name of the company. They're wonderful. And they came up with Dream Powder. It's basically hot chocolate, but it's got all this natural stuff in it, melatonin and whatnot. And I drink it every single night before bed. And I knock out 8-9 hours, just beautiful sleep. But that's not the best part. The best part is the next day when I wake up. I don't wake up in a fog. I wake up feeling like $1 million. Go get some. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly.
Hey, welcome back to I'm Right with Jesse Kelly. I, of course, am not Jesse Kelly. I'm Mike Slater filling in for Jesse. Today, I host Breitbart News Daily, which we simulcast right here on the First TV every weekday morning from 7 to 9. So join us bright and early tomorrow morning. One thing Jesse is honestly the best at is not getting distracted by what the media is telling you to focus on. But instead, he's excellent. He's always looking at the things that directly affect your life, the things that are most important. And there are a few things I would argue that are more directly important than your doctor. If you're on the medical operating table, that's supremely important. Have you heard about what's going on at UCLA Medical School? UCLA Med School used to be one of the best med schools in the country. But this is what communists do. They infiltrate and destroy. I've made the argument that woke people actually have a better sense of what's good, beautiful, and true than the average person because they need to seek out what is good, beautiful, and true in order to destroy it. Regular people may not realize what is good, beautiful, and true and what's essential, and they take these things for granted. But the woke, they see these things and they hate them. And they infiltrate them and they take them over and they use them for power for as long as they can and then they ultimately destroy them. Wokeness is a disease. It should be something that they teach how to treat and cure at med school, not something that spreads in med school. But anyway, UCLA Med School, they get 13,000 applications a year. Last year, they accepted 173 students. That's a 1.3% acceptance rate. I share that because they could accept the best, but they don't. Back in 2021, there was a black applicant whose grades and test scores were far below the UCLA average. But the dean of the admissions department, when the committee rejected that applicant, because obviously, the dean said, "Did you not know that African-American women are dying at a higher rate than everybody else? We need people like this in this medical school. We need more black doctors, even if it means accepting unqualified black doctors." Affirmative action is illegal in California. It's one of the few conservative things that still exist in California. Actually, there was a vote in 2020 to allow affirmative action, and it got voted down 57-42 by the people of California. It's illegal, affirmative action. But they get around it. They still do it. at UCLA Med School. And there's been some whistleblowers. There's a report by the Free Beacon, the Washington Free Beacon. Race-based admissions have turned UCLA into a failed medical school. That's from one of the former members of the admissions committee, who said, "We want racial diversity so badly, we're willing to cut corners to get it." They talked with 8 professors at the med school, other UCLA officials. How bad does it have to be for these otherwise progressive people at UCLA Med School to come forward and speak out against what's happening at their school? How bad must it be? In some of the groups that this dean of the medical school admissions department has admitted, more than 50% of students failed standardized tests on emergency medicine, family medicine, internal medicine, and pediatrics. More than 50%. One professor said that a student in the operating room could not identify a major artery, and then a classic woke victim mentality berated the professor for putting her on the spot. Insert Jesse Kelly joke about putting her on the spot. Another professor said that students at the end of their clinical rotations don't know basic lab tests, and in some cases are unable to present patients. Presenting a patient just means here's their symptoms, here's what it could be, here's what a cure could be. Like, that's what a doctor does. And here we have these students unable to do it. One professor said that faculty are seeing a shocking decline in knowledge from our medical students. And of course, the double standard, right? All the normal criteria for getting into medical school, one admissions officer said, only apply to people of certain races. For other people, those criteria are disregarded. This dean of admissions, she also just happens to be the vice chair for equity, diversity, and inclusion of UCLA's anesthesiology department. And she routinely, this is according to people on the admissions committee, gives Black and Hispanic applicants a pass for subpar metrics, and Asians and white people need a near perfect score to even be considered. Check this out. One committee member says the bar for underrepresented minorities is, quote, as low as you could possibly imagine. As low as you could imagine. Amazing. One professor says she's lashed out at anyone who dare question the qualifications of minority students. This is from 5 different sources. Who said that if you disagree with her decisions, then you are privileged and racist, and you have to do diversity training. There was a Native American applicant who they rejected, and this dean chewed out the committee and made them sit through a 2-hour lecture on Native American history delivered by her own sister. A little re-education happened. She said that 2 people backed up this story, that there was a highly qualified white male who was knocked down several spots because, as she said, quote, we have too many of his kind already. Ooh, his kind. She also told people who said, that's ridiculous, that you're not allowed to have an opinion because you're not BIPOC. That's a Black, Indigenous person of color. One professor says that UCLA still produces some good graduates, but a third to a half of the medical school is incredibly unqualified. Keep that in mind. Not a third to a half is like less than we would maybe like. No. Incredibly unqualified. 24% of students failed 3 or more of what they call shelf exams. So you do a clinical rotation and like pediatrics, and then you take a shelf exam about that. 24% have failed 3 or more. All right, so I'll tell you what's going to happen here. First of all, this is at UCLA Med School. We know, surely it's other med schools across the country, certainly across California. What they're gonna do is they're gonna lower the standards of the test. But they did this when I was in high school. It used to be a 65 to pass the exam, and then it made it a 55. And oh gosh, golly, wouldn't you know, more people passed. We must be doing better in school. So they're gonna lower what it takes to pass, and then eventually they're just gonna get rid of the tests altogether. Just like they did with air traffic controllers. They got rid of the air traffic controller test to find out who would be the best at being an air traffic controller. And now we have planes running into each other on the runways and planes almost landing on top of each other on the runway. They turned that test for air traffic controllers into a questionnaire. What sports did you play in high school? What was your worst subject in school? I'm not kidding. One professor at UCLA said some students are accepted with GPAs so low they shouldn't even be applying. I'll end with this one. A reporter said, or excuse me, a faculty member said, I normally... I wouldn't normally talk to a reporter, but there's no way to stop this without embarrassing the medical school. It needs to be stopped. We're talking about our health. And listen, it's all pretend. This dean, if her child was in the operating room, you think, and the best doctor's coming, you think she'd be like, whoa, 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 you're not Chicano. I need a Hispanic doctor. I need a Chicano doctor. Two other stories that also match this theme. We don't have time for it today, though, but just do a search for LA Times Killer King Hospital in Compton. That's the first DEI hospital a couple decades ago. And then search the name Patrick Chavis, C-H-A-V-I-S, UC Davis. He's the original DEI doctor hire back in 1973. Maybe we'll share those another day if Jesse dare take another vacation. Here's the problem with this. I had a black man call into my radio show today and say, oh, Slater, so you don't think black people can become doctors? Quiet. It is a shame that med schools are lowering standards for people who look different, look certain ways, because now they have created, unfortunately, it is now rational to look at someone, to look at a doctor of a certain skin color and think, where'd you go to school again? UCLA? And I shouldn't be the one lamenting this. I mean, I shouldn't be the only one. It should be black activists. There should be black activists who are demanding that UCLA only choose the best applicants. And there should be the black activists who are fighting K-12 schools and demanding that they do better so they can get more qualified black applicants into the med schools, and they shouldn't have to lower the standards. This shouldn't be just on me. I just want the best. I don't care about color, but if you're obsessed with race and you want more black doctors, whatever, right? But they gotta meet the standard. Right now at UCLA and surely other schools, they don't. And I feel terrible for the excellent black doctors because now they'll be judged as not qualified. It's not my fault, it's UCLA's. Now, can we embarrass the schools enough to get them to change their ways? I don't know. Marxists have no shame, so you can't shame them. Their goal is to destroy. The good people at UCLA Med School, they gotta take power back now before it's too late. It might be too late already. But let's learn a lesson. If you see the Marxists taking over the places you love, you see the communists taking over the things you love, do not let the devil get a foothold. Coming to next, John Carney's gonna be here with the latest with the economy. Well, economic update next, right here on I'm Right with Jesse Kelly, Mike Slater filling in, Slater Radio on Twitter and Instagram.
You're not stuck in your timeshare. You believe you are stuck in your timeshare because these timeshare companies are a bunch of big fat liars. What they do is, I mean, look, what they did to you, they do to everybody. They get you in with the fancy seminar, it looks good, and look at the beach house. And you like it, and I hope you did enjoy it, right? They can be so much fun. I hope you had a wonderful time, friends, family. But eventually, as they know, everyone's going to move on. You're done with it. Maybe you can't even afford it anymore with the way prices are with everything now. And so you let them know, hey, all right, I'm done. Y'all can have it back. And that's when they drop it on you. Have it back. Oh, sorry, it's yours for life. They don't let you out. Lone Star Transfer will get you out. They will legally and permanently get you out of that timeshare. Make one phone call, but not to the timeshare company. Stop wasting your breath. Call Lone Star Transfer. This family business will set you free. 844-310-2646. Lone Star Transfer.
Hey, welcome back to I'm Right with Jesse Kelly. I am Mike Slater filling in for Jesse. I host Breitbart News Daily every weekday morning, and we simulcast 7 to 9 right here on the First TV. So we'll see you again bright and early tomorrow morning. So we started off the show talking about what's happening at the courthouse in New York, and they're in full-blown panic mode, as we've been talking about. Things are so bad for the Biden campaign that Politico just threw out an article with the headline, Dems are in full-blown freakout over Biden. And of course, the main reason is inflation. One Democratic strategist said it's the letter I, but not capital I as in Israel, but lowercase I as in inflation. The great John Carney is here, Breitbart News finance and economics editor. And please sign up for the best business newsletter. It's the Breitbart Business Digest newsletter. You must sign up for that and get that business news. John, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks for the promotion of the Digest. Everybody, it's free. There's no reason anybody should not subscribe.
No, it's truly the only economics analysis that I trust. Here's my question for you, the main one. I like talking to you mostly just about the economy for the economy's sake, but let's talk about the economy for politics' mm-hmm. sake. Is there anything that can change in the next 5 months? And is there anything that Biden can do in the next 5 months here to make people forget how bad it is or think how good it is?
No, not really. He's going to try to pour about $1 trillion into the economy, money that was appropriated and has not yet been spent. He is going to try to push that into the economy as fast as he can before the end of the year. But it's not going to change people's impressions of the economy. Things are pretty much set. Once you get to Memorial Day, people's view of what's happening in the economy is locked down. And what they know is that inflation has been very, very high. Home prices are way out of reach. You can't buy a home because the combination of really high prices and really high mortgage rates, and people are very upset about this. They are not going to suddenly get over that. Even if we got better inflation numbers between now and the end of the year, which I don't think will happen, even if that were to happen, I think it's too late to change people's impression that Biden basically really mismanaged this economy.
Is it cliche or true to say that it's the grocery store? Man, you go to the grocery store, it's hundreds of dollars. I mean, we got four kids, six of us, but it's hundreds of dollars every time we go. It's insane. Is that the biggest hurt?
Yeah, absolutely. That is one of the most salient prices in everybody's lives for a few reasons. One, because, you know, furniture prices go up, car prices go up, but how often do you buy a couch? You buy groceries every week. The other thing is they're very transparent. When you go into the grocery store, the prices are all over the place. You see them, and so you notice, oh, that's a lot different than it used to be just a couple years ago. The other thing is that grocery prices went up a lot. It wasn't just like they went up 10%. Over the last couple of years, they're up over around 20, 21%. That's a huge increase. That's the kind of increase you'd expect to see over 10 years, not just 3 years. So people are reeling from that kind of inflation, and it leaves them less money to spend on things like family vacations, fun, summertime. Nope, it's all going in the grocery store.
So Biden's rebuttal to that is it's corporate greed. Shrinkflation and corporate greed, is that going anywhere?
Yeah, so suddenly, the theory here is that suddenly all these companies, they didn't used to be greedy. Under Donald Trump, I guess, no greed at all, right? Even under Obama, no greed. George Bush, no greed. Biden gets elected president and suddenly all at once they become greedy? That's a crazy theory. And if it were true, it would mean we should vote Biden out because he's doing something that drove people crazy with greed. Of course, it's not true. Prices are up because they pumped too much money into the economy. If corporations could just raise prices whenever they got greedy, we would have already had maximum prices. So Biden, when he's lying to people, and I think people sense that, they know when he says, oh, it's greed that caused this, that greed is as old as humanity. There's no explosion of greed that happened. It's not what's driving grocery prices. It's Biden's policies that drove inflation.
That's really interesting, too. The other thing he goes to all the time, and we'll see if he does it again, is like the junk fees. California just passed that bill. They got rid of all junk fees. That's what they branded them. I don't know what people call them. Like resort fees at hotels. And California specifically, you can no longer put at the bottom of the bill like a 5% surcharge for minimum wage increases. So you can't do that stuff anymore. And we hate those things. And like when you go to Ticketmaster, like Ticketmaster's criminal in my book. But I mean, like, does that move the needle at all?
No, it doesn't. And by the way, you're still paying those. They just now put them in the bill without telling you that you have a resort fee there. Yeah. The room just costs more. It's not like that they said, oh, never mind, we're not going to charge you that money. No, they're still charging you. If they were charging you $400 a night for some place and $50 of that was a resort fee, now they just charge you $50 in the entire fee. So it's actually just got rid of the transparency. You used to be able to see some of this stuff. Now you can't. It doesn't make a difference. It's not going to lower anybody's prices. What's really happened, and look, they switched it. They started calling it junk fees because when they tested resort fees, that sounded like something just rich people had to pay. And so they said, oh, we can't, let's not talk about resort fees. Let's call them junk fees. Everybody's against them. But again, it doesn't actually lower the cost for any of us.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that. Because as I said junk fees out loud, I was like, wait a second, that sounds like that sounds like I'm buying the party line or something. I haven't really thought about where that word came from.
And hotels definitely didn't call them junk fees when you got your bill. You weren't like, they weren't like, oh yeah,
it's our junk fee right here. Yeah. Great point. I got about 1 minute left. What's the latest with the Fed and what they're up to, what they can do moving forward here with rates?
Right, so the Fed is just not going to raise rates this year at all. It looked like they may have one or two raises. Most people on Wall Street still think they might cut rates at least once, but there will be no cuts this year. That's what Breitbart's position is. You can read it in Breitbart Business Digest. We'll explain to you exactly why the Fed may want to cut rates, but they're just not going to have the opportunity because inflation is going to stay too hot through the end of the year.
Yeah, that's right. John Carney, Breitbart News, Finance and Economics Editor. It's the Breitbart Business Digest newsletter. Where can people sign up for that, John?
Just go to Breitbart, look at the news. There's a little tag that says newsletters. Click on that, sign up. It's free. We have a bunch of other newsletters. You can subscribe to those too. The Breitbart Business Digest comes out every day and it gives you exactly what you need to know, not just about what happened, but why it happened and what's happening next.
Yeah, that's it. John, great to talk to you, brother. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll end on a light note coming up next right here on I'm Right with Jesse Kelly. Mike Slater filling in. Slater Radio on Twitter and Instagram. Time to lighten the mood. Even this young lass is upset with inflation.
Girls, what's just happened?
So, there's an ice cream van there selling just two ice creams with two chewing gums in it.
Yeah.
For bloody £9 for two of them.
£9 for two?
Yeah, £9. That is going to get nowhere. The one that comes on my street is either £1 a pee or £2. That is going to get nowhere with that.
No, he ain't, is it?
No, he ain't.
That's well bad, isn't it?
Yeah, he should know. And he only does bloody card. Stood there with my cash. Bloody hell.
That's well bad, isn't it?
Bloody well bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, Betty can hear me.
I had to listen to it 10 times to figure out exactly what she was saying. I think my favorite line is, he's not going to get anywhere with that. I also decided I'm going to start using the adjective bloody more often. Every time I go to the grocery store, bloody how much for bloody oatmeal? Bloody Quaker oatmeal. Crikey. That's done. That's Aussie. I'll keep the British accent to Jesse. Does Jesse have a good British accent? Bloody Josh Hammer filling in tomorrow. Filling in for bloody Jesse Kelly. I'll see you tomorrow at 7 a.m. right here on the First TV for Breitbart News Daily. Bloody hell!
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations, thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.